So the subject for the talk is, can you please talk about attachment and how we can detach ourselves from people, emotions and material things? Thank you. So, like on an intellectual level, like the vast majority of us, the vast majority of us are well aware that, many people's experience, it's not everyone, it's only a small section of the population, are quite happy and content. Reasonably happy and content within themselves, but as soon as they start getting involved with other people and other people's stuff, then problems and difficulties come up. Because it comes up in the monastery. You usually find the community members, if you leave them alone and they're left to themselves, they're quite happy as individuals. But as soon as they start getting involved with other people and they have to work with other people and have to put up with their personality, complexes, their nuances and all this type of thing, then the trouble starts and then the problems come up. So, usually you find that in general society, probably 50% of the population, if you leave them alone, they're quite happy. But as soon as you get them involved, get them engaged, get them involved, give them responsibility and duties, and maybe not in every case. Some people are genuinely interested in partnership and children and this and that. But there's always it's like a two-edged sword. You have a number of people in the population who are interested in marriage and children, but as all of you know, that it means that you're taking. You've got your own stuff to deal with, and then you've got your partner's stuff, and then you've got your children's stuff. So, you end up having to cover yourself and a number of other people who are close to you as well. And you feel their happiness and their pain, and you have to deal with their personal stuff, because your partner, say for example, one of our monks, his brother. One of our monks was telling me that his brother, he's got, his two daughters are doing very, very well, very, very, very pleasant young people, good personalities, intelligent girls, doing well at school, this and that. But his wife continually screams and screams and screams and screams at her husband. For really no good reason at all. And one of the factors was that her own mother, that's exactly what her own mother did, and her own mother did that till the day she left home, screaming in her daughter's face almost day after day. So that's what she does to her husband, who essentially doesn't want to divorce, because then it creates problems with the kids. So without getting too dreary, you see this kind of situation where, as human beings, we're in a paradoxical set of circumstances where we suffer from loneliness, we want companionship, friendship, we want to share with other people on a personality level, on an intelligence level, like discussion and knowledge and information and networking, all this kind of stuff. But it's like there's two sides to the coin. So the vast majority of us would be more than happy if we could get along with the vast majority of people that we are in contact with, but it's not possible. So most people are smart enough to know that it's not a good idea to create problems and difficulties for other people, because it comes full circle. You end up burning, one's own fingers. If you mess with other people, you create problems for other people. You can absolutely guarantee it's going to come back on some level. If it's not the person concerned, it's going to be someone else. So the whole thing with attachment, holding on to, say, without getting, I'll try to be as precise as possible, with our relationships with people. We're human beings, we are social creatures, we need our friends, we need intellectual stimulation, The vast majority of us don't like to be alone. We don't like to be alone like 90%, not even 90% of the time. We don't want to live like hermits. If you're living in the world, you don't have any choice. You know, you have to constantly engage people. And all of you who, the vast majority of you have internet connection and social media and, you know, all this stuff, which I'm not very familiar with, but you have mass social communication on different levels. And so you're constantly in touch with people. But one thing I see in the monastery is I don't see a lot of people, even when people come to the monastery, I don't see people actually, you know, really making an effort to talk. I mean, actually, I better not overstate myself. When people have got their phones in their hands or got their phones in front of them, they really don't pay much attention to other people, and they don't speak to them very much at all. But then again, with the Thais, funny enough, when they get together, when the Thai women get together as a group, they don't bring out their phones and start networking on their phones at all. They're all together, maybe 8 or 10 ladies, and maybe the kids are running around, and amazingly, they're just chit-chatting and talking about stuff and whatnot. And so it is possible, even socially, culturally, to spend quality time with people. But because we have differences in personality, so if, you know, the people you come in contact with, you have your personal friends, you have things in common, you get along to a reasonable degree, may not be perfect, but you get along. And there's going to be people who essentially antagonize you, they annoy you, irritate you, and you don't necessarily, you know, you don't enjoy their company. If you had a choice, you wouldn't spend time with them unless you absolutely had to. So it's like human relationships, communication, it's a two-edged sword. You've got to take the good with the bad. Every single one of us, we can pick and choose our friends to a degree. But even then, it's not going to be a perfect scenario, because all of us have personality differences, and those differences, you know, will come up when we're hanging out and we're chatting and whatnot. You know, there's going to be differences of opinion, preferences, you know, where people want to go out and all this kind of stuff. If you've got good communication skills, you can get along with the vast majority of people. But the understanding is, you take the good with the bad. You know that for me, you know, I mean, I like to get along with the vast majority of people, but you know, it's not possible. I've had people, basically just get in my face repeatedly. And my attitude is, if you can't get along, if I make an effort with you and you can't, if you don't reciprocate, you don't get along with me, it's better that we don't talk, I mean, at all. Because all of you have maybe quite a wide network of contacts, this and that. But, you know, it still cuts the ice. If you can't get along with someone, or they start to create problems for you, you know, you're in your full right just to basically disconnect from that person and, you know, don't get involved with them at all. Don't speak to them, don't socialize with them. And you're well within your right to do that, unless you actually have to work with them. You know, they're right next door to you in the office, they're your boss, and you're in a compromised situation. But, you know, you're contacting so many people on a daily basis. So why waste, I don't want to be rude here, but why waste your time with people who really are of no, I can't think of the right words, who really don't add to the quality of your life like whatsoever. So when it comes down to, without repeating myself excessively, when it comes down to human relationships, my mentality is you pick and choose your friends, you pick and choose the amount of, you know, the quality time that you have to spend with certain individuals. You're not put on this earth to please every person who essentially comes your way. And so with this whole thing with detachment, You can, if you're developing meditation over time, you can get a degree of distance between yourself, emotionally between yourself and other people, but it's got a workable range. You're still going to feel your relationships with other people. They're going to affect you in different ways. People have past karma, people can trigger you, but it's not necessarily that they're a bad person. They just bring things up in you which was already there on a deeper level. And so one thing you see, especially when you look at older people, senior people, I mean nothing less than 60, 70 years of age, and you look at the kind of mentality they have. They have this kind of, and I've seen this on a regular basis, where they're really not overly concerned about other people. They can accord with the conditions. What's happening. They can go along with what's happening, but they don't necessarily feel incredibly. It depends on the individual, but incredibly strongly, because with a human being's life experience, I mean, who wants to go through life constantly, going up and down like a yo-yo, according to people and time and circumstances? And this is why, the older generation tend to be, not as a rule, tend to be a little bit more even-minded, don't take things so seriously. The older generation, they've got a sense of humour, or they choose which way they want to live their lives. So they basically just do their own thing. Because if you've been on the planet 60, 70, 80 years, you know that you just can't work. The vast majority of people, you can go your own way, you can do your own thing, but you still have to take other people into consideration. Otherwise, you may do things which are not necessarily to their liking or preference. So with detachment with emotions, and especially with people who practice on a regular basis, you're going to be more sensitive and intuitive than the average person walking the street. So you can get a degree of detachment, emotional stability, like evenness of mind, like over the years, minimum say 5-10 years, but it's not foolproof. You're going to get affected by other people. You've got your own karma which is working through both your body, your mind, and it's not possible really to, as long as you've got a personality and that personality is active, you're going to feel and sense, and you're going to be affected by the sensory. The sensory material which is coming into your mind. And the thing is that all the stuff that you have to deal with is essentially is they're like your teachers. They've got something to teach you, because without emotions you're basically not going to learn very much at all. You have to with emotions, you feel, you're aware, and without that your insight practice is really not going to develop at all. But if I go to an extreme, when you have people at the enlightenment stages, you have a person at the Sotapanna level who has the characteristics of the Sotapanna, is that inner happiness, joy, very 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 firm insight, really really very very strong insight. Very good quality samadhi, mental energy, very high level of mental energy. They don't take things seriously. They don't go up and down the way an average person will. When you break through to the first path and fruit, and you understand anicca, dukkha, anatta, you know experientially that the whole universe is imbued, for choice of better words, is impregnated by the three characteristics of existence. And no matter what you think or what you feel, it's going to be like that for eternity. So as we move through the course of our lives, because they've known it to the very fiber of their being, the very depth, the deepest experience that you can possibly have, the nibbana experience within the mind. You can't go deeper than that. The actual, they see the emptiness, the inherent emptiness on the most profound level in the mind, and they know that everything, all the people here, everything, the buildings, anything you can possibly think of is inherently empty, unstable, and will not satisfy you, will not truly make you happy till the day you die. But it's only because of the power and the strength of the attainment that these people almost are at the supernormal level. They can handle an incredible amount of stress and pressure and like duties and responsibilities and not even sweat. Say Achyam Brahm, I sit next to Achyam Brahm the vast majority of the time, and I see exactly what he is capable of. And we've had senior monks in Thailand, because I won't go into the dynamics, who may have a sense of, say, jealousy with Achyam Brahm, where they feel that Achyam Brahm is too interested in building and traveling, and but you know what he does has a lot of value, and it's insight based. You know, he's setting up communities, he's setting up facilities for people that every year hundreds and hundreds of people can use these facilities, can have contact with the monastics. The monastics provide community services. You know, so you have a two-way relationship. And because they know the nature and the danger of samsara, karma and rebirth, and the more people they place on the path, on the Buddhist path, the better off as far as they're concerned, that's the most fruitful thing you can do is to establish as many people as possible on the Buddhist path, so they have an opportunity to break through and essentially become free from karma and rebirth, and to become free from attachment on all levels, both on the emotional, material, and on the rebirth. You want to the end result of the Buddhist path is the full transcending of rebirth, completely. Not just to be reborn in a nice, pleasant, happy world, but just basically bring an end completely to all worlds, to all rebirth, and then all suffering, all unsatisfactoriness ceases completely. So this principle of emotions. How do we develop emotional detachment? You can develop this with the emptiness principle, with equanimity practice, where equanimity is based on developing this attitude that all beings are the owners of their karma. The emptiness principle can be quite effective as well, but with these two practices, you need to be quite careful, because you basically can get like careless. You don't care what's going on around you. This lack of one's feelings become, what's the right word? So I wouldn't say blunted, become cooled. You become more distant with people, emotionally distant. But you've got to be careful. When you're moving in general society, you need to stay in touch with people, because if you lose that, the quality of your connections with other people can get impaired. Problems can come up if you're overly distant, overly detached. But if you have the ability to essentially, some of us would be more than happy to say cool, so like strong emotions like anger or jealousy or possessiveness, or our partner maybe talks to someone in the monastery or even at the Buddhist center or at a party, and then you just feel this, one feels threatened, one feels jealous and all this kind of stuff. Many of us would rather not have this kind of experience, but you still need to have like a minimum level of intuitive, say like emotional feel for other people, because you know, the one of the main principles of being a human being is your ability to actually sense where other people are at. Otherwise, you know, it's going to impair your relationships with the people around you. And because, you know, you're not hermits, you're not, you know, you can't go through life in a solitary fashion. All of you have to engage people constantly. And you need to be flexible when you're relating with people. You know, I mean, I come in contact, my life is nowhere near as busy as Achyam Brahmali, Achyam Brahmach and Sujata, but, you know, being in the top, in the top line, you know, looking after things, that it forces you to be flexible and adaptable and to connect with different people from different parts of the world, different cultures. And it's actually quite useful. It's a useful thing to have. And so I'll just move on with that third point, detaching from material things. That one thing that you will find, that you'll actually see, which will be quite useful for you to develop, say, material detachment, is at the beginning, is to simplify one's lifestyle. So, you know, minimize the amount of possessions you have. So, just only have one phone. I mean, there's so much stuff that people can buy these days. Just have one phone or one tablet or one, mainframe computer. So, you know, whatever works for you. Some people have to use a phone, a tablet, and they're running a full-powered either laptop or computer as well. With business and different types of dynamics, networking, all this kind of stuff. Even within your home, you have one microwave oven, one television set, one Xbox, you know, whatever kind of technological gadgets that people can purchase, you only have one of everything in the house. You know, say, for example, you could have mum and dad. You know, they say they share a phone, they share appliances, but it's a different ball game if you've got teenage sons and daughters. They you know, they may demand their own phones, demand their own laptop, and they, you know, you may need to be flexible in that sense. But you will find that when you simplify your lifestyle, you reduce the amount of stuff that you've got overall in your home. It reduces the amount of things that you have to look after. It reduces the amount of things that you have to fix and repair and maintain and clean. And you find that within your home that you have a much more sort of spacious environment, which you will actually feel. So with the monks' kutis that, you know, I mean, I don't really have that much stuff. The kind of approach I use these days is I like to relinquish one thing. I did this previously. I haven't done it for the last week or so, but like relinquish one thing every day, even if it's like a pen, or it could be absolutely anything, like a notepad, or a container, even a pill container, just anything whatsoever. Relinquish one thing in your abode, in your home, in your flat, your apartment, every single day. And within 30 days, you know, you'll find that you're really, really slimming down. You're really getting down to, you're starting to get down to basics, just like essentials. But it does make life much easier. You know, I mentioned a story previously about a couple. They cleared the house completely. Everything which was completely irrelevant to their Dharma practice, they moved it out, the pot plants. Anything which took up like time, maintenance, work, like cleaning and dusting, they moved everything out. So they actually had time to meditate 3 to 4 hours every single day, even though they were working full time. So you can imagine that, you know, 3 to 4 hours, that's a lot. And you're working 8 hours a day as well. But half the house was gone. You know, it was almost like just absolute basics, you know, the lounge suite, the television was gone. I think maybe they had a little transistor radio, but anything you can possibly imagine that you could get rid of, it was they moved it out or gave it away or sold it. So the attachment with material things, like being satisfied with you know, like old stuff. I mean, you know, even for the monks, like we use say like old phones for iPods. You know, we have a rule, we don't have SIM cards. The vast majority of the monks never want SIM cards in the monastery, because life just gets very, very busy and too much communication, complication, all the rest of it. But, you know, the vast majority of the stuff, even in the monk store, or even the old phones that we have in a box, all that stuff is at least 7 to 8 years old. And the vast majority of the monks, all this stuff, even the monk who's got the latest stuff, who's a computer whiz, and he basically wants to keep his device for a minimum of 5 to 7 years, you know, even his stuff is already several years old. So no, even with the monks, even the other monks would frown and maybe they may complain if one of us went out, or we organised with our parents to get maybe the latest whatever, you know, super amyloid iPad or Android device. So it's usually super amyloids with the Android system, and or the latest iPad Pro 13.3 with a Bluetooth keyboard. You know, all this fancy stuff you can buy. The vast majority of us wouldn't be caught dead with stuff like that. We wouldn't want the other monks to see us with stuff like that. And we wouldn't want the lay disciples to see us with the latest gear, because some of these people, you know, they can't even afford that quality merchandise themselves. So, even our phones, tablets, computers, they can run perfectly. Like one of the monks, because he had to do business dynamics with the engineering projects, this, that, and the other, he had to run his old Apple laptop, and, you know, 7 years old, and it just run like a dream, just run perfectly. You know, we've got monks who can maintain anything, the phones, tablets, computers. So, you know, people think, oh, like it's too old, or it's not good enough, or, you know, it's not fast enough. It's just rubbish. You know, half the monks, we can triple the speed on phones and tablets, and there's all sorts of tricks. You know, you can do things with computers and whatnot. So, you know, people can, you know, they can simplify. They can make do with lower quality stuff. Old requisites, and you don't get caught up in this the constant like updating. I mean, every 6 months there's the technology with the smartphones is increasing. So, you know, who wants to spend like minimum like whatever $1,000-$2,000 on the latest iPhone XR? It's absolutely, I mean, it's insane money. You know, who's got that kind of money to spend on a phone? You know, it's just crazy. I mean, some people may go that way, but it's not for me to judge. But my father would probably be screaming in my face if he saw me with something like that. So, you know, just that principle again, you know, detachment. So, how strongly, you know, are we being affected by consumer forces, by eBay and, you know, the like advertising on television, and, you know, maybe getting a later model car and this and that. But I know a person who actually updated their vehicle. Their previous vehicle was very nice, and a nice Toyota, run very, very well, very reliable. But a particular person wanted a more sporty European vehicle, and, you know, you've got to be careful with European cars, because they're not always reliable, and the engineering, they're not as straightforward as, say, maybe Toyota or Nissan or the older Holdens and Fords, a little bit more complicated, not as reliable. That's been proven, unless you maybe go for Volkswagen, Mercedes. You know, there's certain brands, you know, you can always check out. And but unfortunately, you know, it's more like a feel good thing. So I mean, why do we want that latest vehicle? Why do we want that latest phone? Because half the time, you know, we feel good being in possession of these more modern, say, devices and vehicles and appliances. When sort of like older stuff is more than satisfactory, and also we're protecting the planet too on an environmental level. So that old story from from the Bangkok fraternity, where there was a scholar monk who tried to live as simply as possible. Good personal development. He practiced what he preached. So when he was preaching to the lay community about simplicity of livelihood and contentment with little, and, you know, that's what he actually did. He just didn't tell the lay people to follow the Buddha's teaching. You know, he walked the talk. And then, so he had 30,000 disciples in Bangkok. He had his own, he was a very capable person. He had his own radio program. So when you get the Chow Kun Award, the senior, religious order award as a Chow Kun for recognition of service, and when you have your own radio program, you really have gone big time in Bangkok. You really got status and recognition. But he had that kind of approach with his disciples, and then within months he gets a letter from the economics minister complaining that his particular style of teaching was no good for the economy at all, because he was discouraging his disciples from updating, from maybe not being so economical with, say, goods and service and products and, you know, all this kind of stuff that all of you are familiar with. So the economics minister, what he's interested in is generating, so like, you know, the like money and income, you know, within the economy, you know, increased consumption, which is not necessarily good for the planet as well. And so, let's see now, material things. In essence, you know, you can practice it. You know, you just slim down, you streamline your lifestyle, and you just see, try to go down to bare bones, you know, a bit of an exaggeration, bare bones, but and then just see how it actually feels, you know, maybe just one main bank account, one credit card, one of everything of your personal use, and if you can, maybe share with someone else, and actually see how it feels, put it to the test, because if any of you have a real genuine interest in Dhamma, you may be more than prepared to give it a spin and actually look at the results, because I know for myself that even though I have an attachment with phones and tablets, I've got like a technological interest in these things. But for myself, you know, for my own use, I mean, I'm down to, it's not nothing impressive, but I've got an old phone. And like a big phone and a tablet, but I won't let those things go until they basically crash. You know, the quality is good enough. You know, and you just keep the thing until it dies. And when you have to update, you don't get the latest. You get something which is at least several years old. But the quality of old stuff, even stuff which is 3 or 4 years old, the quality is still outstanding. The speed. The specifications. I better roll it up and see. Now I think we've got to do another 30 minutes. What, say, like walking, meditation, 10 minutes of chanting, and then question and answer. So please walk, meditation as you please.